Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Farida, and I'm the Director of Client Services for Wellness Factors, and I'll be the facilitator for today's Tele-Lunch and Learn on fatigue. We're really excited to introduce our guest speaker today, Dr. Michael Gazzi. And Dr. Gazzi is licensed by the state of Connecticut and has been in practice since 1993. He's graduated from the National College of Naturopathic Medicine from Portland, Oregon, and he specializes in diagnosing and treating fatigue, as well as other acute and chronic healthcare issues as well. So welcome, Dr. Gazzi.
Hi, Farida. Thank you for having me on.
So before we dig into the questions, I would like to start off by just sort of setting the stage for today's workshop. When it comes to fatigue, there's a tendency to muddle the lack of sleep with fatigue. Sometimes people think if they don't get enough sleep, that's a cause of them feeling fatigued, which is true. However, sleep is only one attribute. There are many factors like stress, high workloads, lack of nutrition, lack of exercise, physical ailments, lack of sunlight, relationship conflicts, whatever it is, it's important to get to the bottom of it. And for some of us, fatigue is still a mystery. So that being said, let's get started. So Dr. Gazzi, how would you define fatigue, and how is fatigue affecting us as a society from a national perspective?
Well, I mean, the definition, I think, is really important because almost everybody I see as a patient, no matter what they're coming in for, if I ask them how is their energy, very, very few of them say, I feel great, I have tons of energy. Most of them say, well, yeah, you know, I'm tired at the end of the day, or, yeah, 2 p.m., boy, that's a killer. I'm just ready to take a nap. And so, you know, it really depends on your definition, but optimally, you should have all the energy you need or want. Having an afternoon crash is not a good idea. It means something's wrong with the cycles of hormones or the energy production of the body, or you're overstimulating in the morning, but it really shouldn't happen. 5 o'clock shouldn't be the end of your day. I mean, if you get done with work, go home, great, but you should have energy to go home and enjoy your family and do your things around your home or take care of the things you have to do. And really, you know, I say, you know, if you're getting 8 to 9 hours of sleep, which we'll talk about later, the rest of the time you should be able to function, and not saying go gung-ho all day, but to be able to function, not be crashing and having to take naps. It's really not appropriate. I mean, you really should have as much energy as you want to function with, you know, as much as you need.
Mm-hmm. So really what you're saying is fatigue can really be defined by the amount of energy that you have throughout the day.
Well, I think that's a big part of it. And obviously, some people will say, well, I have energy, but I'm irritable all the time because I'm pushing myself because I'm tired. And I'm like, well, then you don't have energy if you're tired, you know, if you're irritable because you're having to tank up on coffee all day, because if you don't, you're exhausted, then you're tired still. You're just artificially revving it up.
Right, so, I see.
Yeah. You want to have what we call clean energy, not hyper energy. Stamina is a good word.
Oh, I see. Okay. And that energy would be, like what you're saying, could be like more constant than sort of having the peaks and valleys?
Well, I mean, it's good to have, you know, there are times when you have to run or you have to go fast, but nobody's going to be able to run all day without stopping, without getting some, you know, some lulls. But what you want to have is that balance where, you know, maybe a few hours of the day you have a high energy output, and the rest of the time you're more of a moderate, slow and steady wins the race, more like a diesel truck than a Ferrari. You know, you're going to go steady, slow and steady, go, go, go. But not where it's constantly fast. The people who are manic, who talk like I'm talking right now, all the time, constantly, yeah, at some point you're gonna crash. You can't do that continuously. But to have a continuous level of steady energy through the day with a few peaks when you need them, I think is a good balance.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great definition. And would you say that as a society that we are generally quite fatigued, or do you think in general we do okay in that area?
I think as a society, 90 to 95% of us would say we are tired. If you define fatigue as having the energy, all the energy you need or want. And a lot of people say, well, I'm 60 years old, of course I'm tired. No, that's not true. You shouldn't be. Or people will say, well, I worked hard all day, it's 5 o'clock, I should be tired. I'm like, no, really, you shouldn't be. You might be slowing down for the evening and not doing as aggressively active, but you shouldn't have to fall asleep on the couch or sit and just veg because you're so exhausted you can't get up. You know, that's really not not a good thing. You want to be able to function in some way, do some work, do mental work. And lack of energy can cause depression, and people don't know that. A lot of times the only sign of depression is they feel tired. So we're talking about causes here again, but I know you mentioned sleep. Nobody gets enough sleep in this country, it seems. Very, very few people are getting appropriate amounts of sleep.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about
that. I don't have
the
statistics, but it's just amazing.
Yes, I know, and we'll definitely talk about that later on in the workshop about sleep. But that's a great definition of fatigue, so people sort of really understand where they need to be in terms of their energy levels. And then I think a lot of times people need to be at a level of consciousness before they can make changes, and that gives us a benchmark to work from. So how important is fatigue to our overall health from a physiological perspective and even an emotional perspective?
Well, like I said a little bit before, is that kind of mix of am I depressed or am I tired? People who are tired tend to be depressed, and people who are depressed tend to be tired. So it comes down to the question of which came first. Many times I find people are depressed because their adrenal glands are burned out and they're tired, and that burnout, that frustration of not being able to get up and go and do things they want to do is very frustrating, and it wears them down and they get depressed from that. So, the other things you have to look at, though, is if you're tired, how good are you going to be able to do your work, mental work especially? Are you going to make mistakes? Are you going to be, unable to function? Are you going to be irritable with your kids? Are you going to be, irritable at your spouse, your partner? Are you going to be depressed? Are you going to be unmotivated? Fatigue affects all of these things, and so it can certainly affect relationships. It can affect your job. Would you rather hire someone who has energy or someone who's tired all the time? I'd rather hire someone who has energy. I know. It affects us in many, many different ways.
Mm-hmm. I see. And then what are some of the factors that could cause fatigue? I mean, we talked a little bit about a few of them in the introduction, and how would someone really overcome these factors? And I appreciate that different factors would have different remedies, but maybe we could talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Well, I would, kind of not to limit myself, but I'm going to say, let's look at six major reasons that people could be tired. Obvious one you mentioned, lack of sleep. And it's not just the number of hours, it's also the quality. So, I've had patients say, well, I sleep 9 hours a night, but I'm up every two. And the question that comes up is, well, when you wake up, how long are you awake before you fall back asleep? Oh, 20, 30 minutes. Well, they're not getting 9 hours of sleep, because there's that in-between time of getting back to sleep and waking up, et cetera. So that's a factor. It's also, are you getting REM sleep? I mean, are you getting good sleep or are you getting restless sleep? So, I know we mentioned sleep isn't the only cause, but it certainly is one of them. And sleep has many, insomnia has many causes, ranging from not enough exercise to too much stress. But there's things that we can address. Certainly we can address, stress management. Excuse me 1 minute while I try to get rid of the noise. And we can also look at hormonal causes for sleep, because when there's a hormone imbalance, the adrenal glands can make, for instance, a lot of cortisol in the night, and it can wake people up. 2 o'clock, all of a sudden they're wide awake. They can't fall back asleep. So we can address that with herbal remedies or with lifestyle changes like not drinking coffee afternoon, things like that. So the second reason, I know I got to move on with this, is the most common reason for fatigue is low thyroid. And seen that many, many times where the lab work comes up normal, but it's on the edge. And so we'll do a clinical trial with some thyroid, and all of a sudden, wow, not only is the fatigue gone, but the depression's gone, and the cholesterol goes down, and their weight drops. And because they were in the normal range, nobody picked it up. But you have to sometimes look at things and say, well, you're in the normal range, but you're right on the edge. Let's try this. Look at that. You mentioned nutritional deficiencies. Iron is the most common nutritional deficiency in the world. Most people don't know that. Now, in the U.S., they fortify a lot of things with iron, so it's not as common in the U.S. as it is in the whole world. So iron is the most common deficiency in the world. In the U.S., they fortify a lot of foods, but a lot of us don't eat fortified foods because we're into health and nutrition, so we're eating whole foods, which may not be fortified. So we have to be careful that we're not getting iron deficient. At the same time, you don't want too much iron. So it's a really good idea to check iron levels. And there's actually a real specific test called ferritin, which tells us how much iron you have stored in your body versus the normal test, which is just iron, which tells you how much iron you have that day. So ferritin's a really important test. And you can have normal blood counts, for instance, and you'll say, the doctor will say, oh, you're not anemic, but you could have low iron and still be fatigued from that. So it's really important to check the detailed test called the ferritin.
And where would someone go and get that test?
Well, any medical doctor can order these kind of tests, certainly. I mean, certainly a nutritionally oriented doctor like myself would do that more routinely because we tend to be more thorough. Medical doctors really are about running screening tests because they have, you know, they're really regulated by insurance companies. They say they can't run all these expensive tests unless there is a reason to, so they tend to run only the screening tests, but they're not as thorough. So if you have a problem and you go to your doctor and he runs the test and he says you're not anemic and you say, well, can you run a ferritin? He'll probably do it for you. I mean, they can certainly order it. It's just a matter of do they do it routinely.
Okay.
Same thing goes with thyroid. I mean, you can run the more comprehensive thyroid test, the free levels of T3 and T4. They can run them. They don't often do it. Sometimes they're willing to work with you. Sometimes they're not. And again, a nutritionally oriented doctor like myself is more likely because that's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So the other causes, low adrenal function, chronic infections like Lyme disease. I don't know if you guys get Lyme out there. I live in Connecticut where Lyme was named after Lyme, Connecticut, you know. And food sensitivities, real common when people are eating foods that are bad for their bodies. And the food makes them tired. You can usually tell because they say, you know, I eat this and I feel tired afterwards. And you go, well, don't eat that. I mean, there are ways to test for food sensitivities too, if the person's not sure. But sometimes it's that clear, you know.
Right.
I don't want to ramble on one question too long because I know you have a lot to cover.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's great. So maybe we could just recap on the six major reasons.
Absolutely. I kind of jumped around. Sorry about losing there. The lack of sleep we mentioned, I mean, again, quality too, and also being interrupted through the night. Slow thyroid or borderline low thyroid. Low adrenal function. So adrenal glands are your stress glands. They sit on top of your kidneys. And when the adrenal glands get burnt out, you can't tolerate stress. You get really irritable. You get that 2 p.m. crash. You have no drive, no motivation. You tend to be like cold hands and feet. Excuse me. Nutritional deficiencies are the most common reason. Iron is one of them, but it's only one of the nutritional deficiencies. Magnesium is a really common deficiency, and you need magnesium in almost every step of making energy, so that's a really important one. There's a bunch of other minerals like zinc and vitamins like B6 and B12 that you need. So nutrition is a really important part, and I think we'll talk more about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Chronic infections like Lyme disease, Epstein-Barr, which is one of the possible causes of chronic fatigue. And then the last one I mentioned was food sensitivities, which is, you know, foods that are really depleting to your body.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great list, and that's a great checklist for people to work towards as well, just to check in with themselves to see if, you know, one of those may be a contributing factor to their fatigue. So if we focus on sleep for just a moment, we hear many different perspectives. Say a healthy person may need 7 hours, and others may say you need 8 to 9 hours. Or, you know, you also mentioned it's the quality of sleep that's important. I mean, I know for myself, I take some time to fall asleep. I take, you know, anywhere, I would probably say from half hour to 45 minutes to fall asleep, where my partner, I mean, he just puts his head on the pillow and he is out like a light.
Yep, I have the same problem. My wife can be talking to me and all of a sudden she's sleeping. In the middle of a sentence. Drives me crazy.
It just seems so unfair.
It
but,
is. It's,
you know,
terrible. I wake up because it's not fair. No, I'm kidding. No.
But I guess, you know, maybe we could talk about, you know, sleep and really the number of hours people should get and the quality of sleep and falling asleep and what we can do to really remedy that whole area of sleep.
Absolutely. Well, I always tell people the bare minimum is 7 because I don't know anybody who does less than 7 who's doing well. And then the other thing is when you sleep. The Chinese actually say that every hour before midnight is worth 2 hours after. So if you're going to bed at midnight sleeping till 7, that's not as good as going to bed at 10 and sleeping till, say, 5. Okay? So you're going to get more out of that late night sleep after 9 o'clock sleep versus after midnight. Okay? You know, again, the quality, the undisturbed sleep. Sometimes, you know, training your animals not to have to go out in the middle of the night or your kids not to Well, that doesn't always work, right? But the most common scenario I see is people, especially women in their 40s, perimenopausal, they go, oh, geez, I wake up at 2 o'clock and I can't go back to sleep for 2 hours. And it's maddening, you know, they're exhausted and they can't sleep at night and they're tired all day long and it's just terrible. So a lot of that is the cortisol rhythm. We have to get them eating a glycemic balanced diet so their blood sugar's not peaking and valleying during the day and burning out their adrenals. We have to strengthen their adrenals during the day and then help to suppress them at night. And, you know, there are things that can be done to rectify that. Sometimes, you know, taking a nice bath before you go to bed helps to calm people down. For some of us, actually, a hot bath wakes us up. I'm one of them. If I get in the hot tub and a half hour later, I'm like buzzing wide awake. It's very strange, so I don't do that too late. But you have to look at what works for you. A cup of chamomile tea for some people is excellent. Other people, doesn't do anything for them. Valerian makes some people sleep. Some people make them groggy and they can't fall asleep still. So, you know, for every individual, sleep is a unique thing. Avoiding chocolate. Chocolate's very stimulating. Chocolate should be treated like caffeine. You know, no chocolate after dinner. Chocolate should be with lunch, you know. people forget. It's got a lot of caffeine in it.
Mm-hmm.
So eating some protein before you go to bed if you're waking up in the night helps because it keeps your blood sugar from dipping in the night. There's a couple different tips.
Okay, that's excellent. Thank you. There's, you know, many reasons why people find it difficult to get enough sleep. I mean, for example, if you're a single mom with kids or if you have financial struggles or relationship conflicts or even going through a divorce, I mean, what recommendation do you have for people who have difficult circumstances that aren't going to change, really going to change overnight?
Absolutely, and those are difficult. I would love to say that people don't get in those situations, but I'm sure nobody means to or tries to.
Yeah,
some of the ideas actually, like things like not watching TV can be very helpful. I have other people say I can't fall asleep unless the TV's on. That cracks me up, you know. Having a dark room can be helpful. You know, exercise really is so important because it helps modulate stress. It helps get you, you know, tired so you can sleep. Obviously, don't exercise before bed. There's a really great technique, and it's one of those that you can either work with a practitioner or you can learn on your own. It's called EFT, stands for Emotional Freedom Technique. And it's just a phenomenal technique for dealing with anxiety and stress. So if you, you know, a lot of people do, I train how to do the EFT, and they'll do the EFT at night before they go to bed to quiet the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And just get all the stuff off their mind so they can sleep. The other thing that works really well is I call it journaling. It's not truly journaling. It's basically leaving a pen and paper by your bed, and before you go to sleep, write down all the things you got to do tomorrow and write down all the things you're concerned about. And then if you're lying in bed and things are going through your mind, get up, turn the light on, and write all those things down. And then it gets it off your mind, allows you to rest. So if you feel like, hey, at least it's there by my bed in the morning, I can look at it and deal with it. The other, of course, that we mentioned, the hormonal issues, getting tested for nutritional deficiencies is so important. I mean, I see people every day that come in and they're taking a gazillion supplements and they have no idea what they're taking and they have no idea whether or not it's the right things, and usually it's not. And they're taking something that was advertised like CoQ10 when they don't have a heart condition and their problem is sleep, and it makes no sense at all. So, you know, getting tested for deficiencies is a real good idea. You definitely have to work with an alternative practitioner who does that kind of thing, like myself, or another practitioner. I'm sure there's lots of people out your way that do that. Looking at hormonal tests, things like that. I mean, it's really important to treat the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know what the cause is, then you're guessing. You need to do some diagnostic tests to see what the cause is. I mean, I can tell you what I do, but I'm 3,000-something miles from you, you know. We do meridian tests where we check people's organs. We do saliva tests for nutrition. We do blood tests for iron. We do blood tests for, let's say, vitamin D. I mean, there's lots of different nutrients, but you want to know what it is that you really need. You don't want to just be guessing and throwing stuff at people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's very, very good advice. There was a time in life where I had a really hard time with sleep. I was consumed with worry, and I couldn't stop thinking about things. And then I went to a doctor, and she prescribed some sleeping pills for me. And not in a large amount. She said, just try this for a little while and see if it works. And then if it does, you know, then you can come back for some more. But I heard that they were addictive. I don't know. I ended up taking them for a while, but it didn't really help me. And I was just wondering if you could just comment on that.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, certainly sleeping pills can be addictive, and you don't want to get hooked on that. In cases where it's severe, where people aren't sleeping, I mean, I've had patients who are sleeping an hour a night. Sometimes they're not a bad idea temporarily to get back into that rhythm, but to address the lifestyle issues that are causing it, address the stressors that are causing it, are really helpful. And there are herbs that are calming, like valerian, I think you mentioned at one point. And valerian, some people love it and some people hate it. Valerian, for some people, helps them go to sleep and they sleep well. Other people say, it just makes me groggy and I'm lying in bed groggy and I'm not able to sleep. I actually like kava because I tend to be anxious and high-strung, and kava is really good at quieting the mind, calming the mind down. There are some cautions with kava. There's been a few issues with it, safety issues with it, but it's been really minimal. But I always warn people, you know, it's not one of the herbs like chamomile. There's never been a problem. But it's for those like me who are really high-strung, it's a wonderful herb. Some people have found L-theanine to be really good, not necessarily falling asleep, but getting better sleep. And then the EFT that I mentioned, the Emotional Freedom Technique, and you can look that up actually on the web, emofree.com, emofree.com. It's a free website. They have lots of info on it, and they'll give you a little primer on how to do that, how to get rid of worry, how to stop thinking about stuff, how to relax your mind, you know, how to get all that off it.
Yeah, I think that's very key. I mean, I remember when I really personally struggled with sleep, and what I did was I actually tried that technique where I wrote down all the things that I needed to do before I went to bed, and then I just put it into my folder so when I went to work I had that list, because one of the things that was keeping me up was worrying that I wouldn't get my job done. And so I just kept worrying about that, but then I also worried that I would forget certain things. And so when I started writing things down, it was actually very, very helpful for me. And then I just somehow, once I wrote it down, there was a release to that activity. I released it, and it's not that I didn't worry about it. It's more the fact that I just released that energy towards that particular task, and then I was able to sleep. So, I think that's great. I mean, you know, I think there are many different techniques. I know for myself, I mean, I take a shower or a hot bath before I go to bed, and I need to kind of meditate or relax for about half hour or an hour before I go to bed. Whereas some people, I mean, they just jump into bed and they're asleep, like my partner. So, I mean, I think it's just really a matter of trying different things for yourself and see what works. Another thing that kept me up was I have poor circulation. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but when my feet are cold, I can't sleep.
Mm. Oh, definitely. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, so I wear socks to bed.
There you go.
Yeah, but that helps. But so, you know, whatever helps, right? You do what it takes, right, to get
that's right. You gotta try and see what works for you as an individual.
Yeah.
Everybody's different. You know, my wife's funny. We go in the hot tub, and she's so relaxing, and she gets out. She goes, I'm ready for sleep. And I'm like, I'm fully energized. I'm ADD.
Mm-hmm.
So things that normally calm people actually give me energy.
Hey.
And things that stimulate people calm me down. So
yeah.
Coffee doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't give me energy because it just doesn't do anything. It more makes me mellow. Actually, makes me tired. I drink coffee, and I'm like, I'm ready for a nap now. So I just don't drink it. And but whereas a hot tub, I get really relaxed. Now I'm energized and ready to go. I'm like, it almost like gives me that focus. So I've learned. I tell my wife, you go to the hot tub, it's 8:00. Don't do it at 10 because I'll be up all night. Not all night.
Yeah.
I'll be up for a couple hours though because I'm just like, I got this motivation now. I feel great, you know.
Right.
You have to look at, you know, what works for you as an individual. And, you know, if you work with someone, they can help you figure that out. But, you know, even some of it's figuring it out yourself to some extent.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked a little bit about the importance of exercise and the impact that has on fatigue. And I just wanted to go into a little bit more detail about, you know, what amount of exercise would you recommend? What type of exercise would you say is helpful in combating fatigue? And And, you know, is it best to exercise in the morning or the evening? You know, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, definitely not the evening because it's too stimulating, and it also can be just – it'll never happen if you're tired. Morning's the best. Lunchtime's not a bad time. Exercise for someone that's tired generally should be really mild to moderate. It shouldn't be excessively lengthwise. It shouldn't be excessively aggressive. So doing an aggressive step aerobics class for an hour is a bad idea because it burns out the adrenals. And generally people with fatigue have some adrenal insufficiency. So a nice, brisk 20 to 30-minute walk is great. Add in a little bit of gentle strength training to help tonify the muscles would be a nice companion to that. So you could get an hour of exercise in there without, you know, being exhausted and sweaty and just, you know, overly burnt out. If you're really exhausted, like you have chronic fatigue, I'll have people do 15 minutes of exercise three times a day because any more than that, it makes them worse. It exhausts them. So while you need some activity, too much actually can make you feel worse. And, you know, not overdoing – the aerobic exercise is not bad, but it shouldn't be too aggressive. It should be more like a brisk walk versus a step aerobics class. And then, you know, doing some strength training to build the core and to keep the muscles toned, really a good idea.
Mm-hmm. And is there really a difference between, like, exercising at the gym or exercising outside? Like, does that really have an impact on fatigue?
I don't think it's a huge impact. If the gym is where you'll do it, that's fine. I personally think fresh air is a great idea, and the gyms tend not to be very, you know, good air. It tends to be pretty stale. But, you know, exercising outside in the Northwest and the Northeast can be fraught with wetness and snow and up here anyway. And, well, you guys get it too, I'm sure. And, you know, we always say in Oregon, I used to live out in Portland, and, you know, 250 days out of the year it rains sometimes. And just not going to happen, you know. So
yeah.
At home, though, or at the gym, I mean, home's nice. You can open the window a little bit, get some fresh air. But, you know, if going to the gym is what motivates you, then go to the gym. The problem is if you're trying to do 15 minutes three times a day, good luck going to the gym.
Right.
You know, you may want to have a treadmill in the house or have some, you know, the bands for doing exercises. There's a bunch of different patterns, you know.
Right, right.
There's
so really the key is whether it's outside or inside, it's best
it's
if it's outside. But the key is to really getting the exercise that
it's like
that
brushing
you need.
Your teeth. Brushing your teeth. Do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the tough part is incorporating it into our busy lifestyle. But
mm-hmm.
when we look at the number of hours that we're awake in a day, what's, you know, 30 minutes? It's just really a fraction of our waking day.
Right.
So it just becomes down to values and priorities, right?
Yeah,
so,
well, that's what's important.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked a bit about the importance of nutrition. You brought up some really important points about nutritional deficiencies and being tested in that area. Maybe we could talk about, what kind of diet you would recommend. I mean, I know you've given us some examples of staying away from coffee because that has a lot of caffeine, but, you know, maybe we could talk a little bit about nutrition.
Well, coffee's not a bad thing as long as you don't overdo it. I mean, a cup of coffee in the morning, or I always say half a cup morning and half a cup lunch, or a cup in the morning is not a terrible thing for most people. And I don't think it's something to 100% avoid unless you really have a bad reaction to it. You know, the chocolate, same thing. You want to avoid the stimulants. A lot of the dietary thing is about glycemic eating. It's not eating just carbohydrates, which is what people tend to do, because that causes peaks and valleys in blood sugar, which wipes out the adrenal glands. You want to have a balanced, some people use the South Beach concept, some people use the zone concept. It's pretty close. It's having some protein, some fat, some carbohydrates with every meal. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have a piece of fruit in the morning and an hour later eat your meal. That's fine, but you don't want to just eat, you know, a bagel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just too many carbohydrates and nothing else. Put some something on that bagel to help, well, preferably, you know. But I'm saying whatever you're going to do, have some protein with it. If you're going to have a yogurt, add some ground up flax seeds to it. Add some ground up walnuts to it. Add some protein and some fats to it to help keep your blood sugar in a balance. Don't go skipping meals going, oh, I had a cup of coffee for breakfast and then ate lunch at 2 o'clock. Well, you didn't eat anything then until, you know, for how many hours? You've been up since 7? You know, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
7 hours? What's keeping your blood sugar up? Your adrenal glands are. Then you wonder why you crash at 2 o'clock. Because your adrenal glands are shot from having to keep your blood sugar up the whole time.
Right. So it's pretty typical of, you know, a diet to consist of a coffee and a bagel in the morning with some cheese, and then the afternoon to have a big meal, then we get our afternoon slump. And then, you know,
yep.
Typically, you know, Western diet calls for the largest meal at the end of the day. So,
well,
I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, if we were in Europe, obviously we'd have a siesta. We'd eat a large meal at noon and we'd go to sleep for 3 hours. And that's what they do, and that's why they do it, because they eat their biggest meal at lunch. In where we live here in the United States, we don't have that luxury. Most companies won't let you take a siesta for 3 hours. So my advice usually is to eat your largest meal in the morning, not as soon as you wake up, though. It's a little too much, because usually your stomach's not happy. So what I try to do is eat get up in the morning, maybe have a piece of fruit, get my stomach happy, and then somewhere around 9 or 10 o'clock, eat a fairly good meal. And I feel great. And then I eat a fairly small lunch, fairly small dinner, because if I eat too much at those meals, I get, not only, especially lunch, get really groggy. And then if you eat too much at dinner, of course, then you just store it all and you get fat. So, you know, you want to do moderate levels and all those. And every meal should have vegetables. And breakfast is the one that's most difficult, of course, but at least lunch, dinner, big salad, chicken Caesar salad, or whatever you like in there. You know, lots of vegetables. I try to cook two vegetables with dinner, so we have half the plate, three-quarters of the plate's vegetables, because vegetables didn't give a lot of nutrition. They've helped to balance things out.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. You know, and that's really good advice. I mean, much of the times we're on the run and we're in a rush, so we just grab anything that's available to us, but really requires some planning to just make sure that we're eating. I think they say it's about 4 to 5 servings of vegetables a day.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. And that they say fruits and vegetables, it should really be vegetables and maybe a little bit of fruit, one piece of fruit a day. Fruit is way too much sugar for the northern climate. If you're living in the tropics, then no problem. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, vegetables are definitely more nutritionally dense. That's for sure. So we talked about nutrition. I mean, when someone identifies, you know, the key factors that are contributing to their fatigue, you know, how does one really go about making those changes in their lifestyle? Because it really comes down to, you know, your values and what you want for your life. And once you decide that, hey, I want to be a healthy person, you know, we have to go about changing our behavior, and that's one of the hardest things. So could you give us some advice on that?
Well, I mean, making a decision and a commitment to what you're going to do, and then planning ahead. I tell people, plan your day on Sunday. Plan your week on Sunday, because if you get up Monday morning and you have a crazy day like most of us do, and you say, I'm going to try to eat healthy this morning, and you have to think about what you're going to do, it's just not going to happen. You have to, I tell people, on Sunday, plan out your menu for the week so you know what you're going to eat, when you're going to eat, put it in your schedule, when you're going to do these things, when you're going to exercise, and that way you have it set. You're not saying, I'll squeeze exercise in somewhere. That's like saying, I'll squeeze brushing my teeth in this morning somewhere. It might not happen. So you really have to plan it out. One of the things I think, you know, we talk about too is relationships and people being happy. And, you know, it's amazing, but if healthy people who are healthy mentally, emotionally, and physically, you got to be healthy in all those areas, don't have problems with relationships. It's the ones that have mental health issues, emotional health issues, or physical health issues that, I mean, the physical health issues can really drag down a relationship. Who, I mean, nobody wants to take care of their spouse the rest of their life unless you absolutely have to, where, you know, there's actually a disease you can't cure. But it's hard. It makes it really, it puts a lot of stress on the relationship.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, if you have a partner that's continually sort of destroying their health and watching them day in and day out, that's a really hard thing for the, you know, the partner to stand by and feel totally helpless, right?
Correct.
So, so I just have a final question. Are there any success stories amongst your clients that you would like to share?
Well, since I treat chronic fatigue so much, I mean, obviously there's tons of them. I mean, I do a lot of work with perimenopausal women with the 2 to 3 a.m. waking up. I mean, we're usually able to either eliminate that altogether or to at least get to where they wake up for a minute or two and fall right back asleep again. I've seen some very interesting changes. Like we had a guy with really bad arthritis, and they wanted to put him on methotrexate. And I said to him, you're not sleeping enough. He was getting like 5 hours of sleep. We got him sleeping better, and his arthritis went into remission from getting more sleep. I thought that was amazing.
That's
and I've had parents tell me, you know, thank me and say, you know, you gave me my life back. I can enjoy my kids again. I used to, like, I would just snap at my kids, yell at them all the time because I was so irritable because I was so tired. And now I have energy. I feel good. I can play with them. I'm happy around them. I can tolerate the stress of them being upset and crying, you know. It's amazing how it changes your life, feeling good.
Yeah, that's just a great, great testimony to just – even just simple lifestyle changes can make a huge difference in our lives. So thank you for sharing that. So, Dr. Gacy, we're just we're coming to the top of the hour, and I just wanted to know if you had any last words of wisdom. And also, please take this time to tell us a bit about your practice and how people could get in touch with you.
Absolutely. Well, the main tenets of this is, number one, find the cause and treat it. Find the cause of whatever your condition is, treat it. Be thorough. Don't just throw something at someone and say, oh, you're not sleeping, here's a sleeping pill. Find out why they're not sleeping, or work with someone who will find them, and explain everything. If you're working with a practitioner, they should be explaining to you what they're doing, why they're doing it, why they're recommending something, and how long you should be on it, and what it'll do in the long run, and why it's addressing the cause of their problem. And as a practitioner, my main thing is I try to be very, very accessible. I actually give all my patients out my personal email address because I want them, if they have a problem, I want them reaching me and saying, Dr. Gacy, what is it that you can, you know, what should I do? This is what's happening. What should I do? I want them to be able to get back to me right away. I practice in Connecticut, Danbury, Connecticut in the U.S., been in practice 16 years. I'm a naturopathic physician trained in Portland, Oregon. I have a fairly busy practice. We, you know, see patients one-on-one, spend a lot of time with people. Like I said, very accessible. We also manufacture, we'll go into all that detail. Anyway, we work with a lot of different nutritional products. We do, you know, nutrition's part of what I do, not only what people eat, but also taking supplements, very important. I have a website, drgacy.com. It's spelled D as in David, R as in Robert, G as in George, A, Z as in Zebra, S as in Sam, I.com. Now you can find out pretty much everything about me that way. And I do phone consults. I do long-distance work all the time. I have lots of patients out out in Oregon, out in California, down in Florida, who I've never met, but we've worked by phone. And I've been able to help them. Do a lot of work with low thyroid, Hashimoto's. You know, just a broad-spectrum practice. Again, fatigue seems to be the cause of so much, so we tend to focus in on that.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Thank you very much. So before we sign off, I just wanted to talk about the number of resources on your wellness portal. Under your dashboard, there is an online health tracker where you can assess your overall emotional health, physical health, nutritional health. And so I encourage folks to take these assessments. And because a low score on these assessments could be a contributor to the fatigue you're feeling in your life. And there's also a litany of articles and videos on the subject of fatigue, so I encourage everyone to tap into that. So thanks again, Dr. Gacy, for your time, and we look forward to our next workshop on nutrition in November. Thanks, everyone.